The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The saga over the airport cap, it links to what we were talking about earlier on in respect of planning and the length of time the planning process takes in Ireland. The interesting thing about the airport cap seems to be that it looks like everybody involved wants to see it lifted. It is one of those public arguments where it's hard to see much of the way of opposition. Eddie Wilson, the chief executive of Ryanair, last week described it as craggy island economics, quotes, that's keeping the laughable airport Dublin cap in place. And the chief executive of Ryanair, Eddie Wilson, is with us this morning. Eddie, before we get into the passenger cap and the relative merits of it, can you explain how it actually works from an airline's perspective? Is it that you get a set of slots and are told no more beyond that?
Yeah, the slots are allocated each year. The IAA has to allocate those slots in terms of the capacity. Sometimes you'll have capacity at airports because the terminal can't take a certain amount of passengers or the runway doesn't have sufficient capacity. But in the case of Dublin Airport, what happens is that if you've got slots from the previous year, you get to keep those. Then they people give up slots because they're not going to use them, and then there's additional slots, and that all fits into the movements at airports. And if you put an artificial cap on that, that means that you can't put in any extra capacity. And that's why you had this silly thing of whereby, like this winter, if the cap hadn't been lifted by the courts here in Ireland while it's been held in Europe, you would have had capacity cut back by 50% in November and December of this year, which would have sent, as I said in the article, airfares through the roof.
Because they are the busiest periods through the winter months?
A sufficient amount of the slots were used in the summer, and then you have to squeeze the remaining amount into the winter, and the only way to comply with it was to take ones away.
So the slot allocation is not per month or per week or per day. It is across the totality of the season.
It's per season. So the summer season runs from, broadly the 1st of April until the last Sunday, whatever, in October. And then the winter season kicks in from there until 31st of March.
And can you decide how that gets allocated? You have a landing and a takeoff slot, and you can bring in an aircraft from anywhere that you choose. That's your own business.
Yeah, but generally it's based carriers. So in other words, if you go out today at 6 o'clock this morning and the summer season, there will be 34 Ryanair aircraft lined up and ready to go. And it's the first wave slots that are always of a premium because everybody needs to get out when the airport opens and get out on time. And then you'll have some arrival slots. But if you go out to Dublin Airport at 12 o'clock in the day, there will be less activity because there'll be less aircraft, because those aircraft that took off this morning are down in Spain or France or the Canary Islands, and then they've got to come back. So you set the capacity. I mean, like, we get into it too, like, that part of it is quite technical, but what happens is that if the passenger number of 32 million is the maximum that you could do, then that's divided down into the amount of slots, and if it doesn't add up, you can't grow. You can't put anything additional in.
So how long ago did you begin to see that this was likely to be an issue?
Well, we didn't think it was going to be an issue at all because, I mean, if you rake over the coals here, what happened during COVID was that the airport authority should have, the DAA should have applied to have that increased in good time. It wasn't. It then caught up with the growth that came back and everyone said, oh, we've got a problem here. Then you couldn't grow and the growth went elsewhere. And, the cap was really about an outdated planning constraint back in 2007 about we won't be able to get people to the airport because we don't have the road infrastructure and all that. And that was pre-M50 and all that.
So, now, can you, I know for you it is probably self-evident, but for many it isn't. Explain how the thing of the growth going elsewhere actually works. Because people will think, well, if I'm in Dublin and I want to go to Malaga, I'm still in Dublin and want to go to Malaga. How can that transfer?
Because what happens is the additional growth. So we would have put, once the cap was lifted, we put in one extra aircraft this year. If the cap was still there, that aircraft would have gone elsewhere. And it would have been part of a schedule. It may have gone to London Stansted and then done 8 flights a day for the entire season, rather than bringing that capacity into Dublin. So, and then if it got to November and December this year where it was cut by 50%, well then the amount of based aircraft would have had to go somewhere in the network because we've got to fly them. So it doesn't mean that the planes are flying day to day. You've got to think about, I got 600 aircraft, okay? 34 of them start and end the day in Dublin. 3 of them start and end the day in Shannon. 3 start, well, 4 for the summer in Cork. 4 start and end the day in Cork. And, you know, 52 of them in Stansted, 2 in Prestwick. So that's where it is. And then they build the schedule. So as you look at Dublin Airport, one of those aircraft landing today could either be one of the Dublin aircraft that left this morning and is coming back, or it could be the aircraft from Stansted that comes into Dublin and then goes back to Stansted. So it's a mixture. But the question is, if you put in an aircraft into Dublin, that generates about another 400,000 passengers for the year, because it goes backwards and forwards.
Single aircraft gives you 400,000 passengers.
Yeah.
And have you a sense of, if the cap isn't lifted, because you'll obviously have projected in terms of what that means for your aircraft.
It has been lifted now temporarily because of the European courts, because they've said, look, essentially you've got slots are like property rights. You have the right to take off once you use the slots. And the European courts have taken, it's been referred and said, look, while we're thinking about this, You've got to lift the cap temporarily. But it doesn't do much for planning. You want this to be gone. You want it to be gone now, because we're coming to the end of the order. We have another 29 odd aircraft to come, 30 aircraft to come next year. And then there's a slight break, and then there's 300 aircraft coming. We're already planning those. Like, all the aircraft for next winter are more or less planned. All the ones for next summer are already planned. You've got to get them on sale. Takes, you know, 6 months, a year to do that. And if you've got any uncertainty, you're not going to do that. So, you know, this happens then on...
So if you have a doubt that the cap is going to stay away, what you'll do is say, well, okay, rather than risking planning based on that aircraft in
and
Dublin,
changing
we'll
it,
put it out to Frankfurt or Stansted or wherever else.
And then that aircraft will essentially live there, okay? And the crew will be associated with that.
Now, can you explain to me, I have rarely seen something where there seems to be so many people on one side of the argument with so little effect. There's yourself, there's Aer Lingus, there's the combined American carriers, there's the DAA, there's the divil and all. Why is it not having any success?
I really don't understand why, you know, the government doesn't do something about this. It is blatantly obvious that we have a gateway into the economy. It has to grow. And the idea that it's going to not grow because of an outdated planning restriction to do with an M50 that's clearly there and a bus infrastructure that's clearly there. The runway is there, the additional runway, which we can't use the capacity. The terminals are there, right? And, you know, it's going to happen. The question is, I don't know why governments just don't grab the net.
But you have access to these people, Eddie. When you sit down across them at the table and say, what's the story? What do you get?
We had a Minister for Transport before this who just abdicated his responsibility and said it's to do with the planning application. I mean, it's a planning application about, it's not like you're building a skyscraper. You're not doing anything. You're lifting a notional number. And the only reason that number is there is because nobody did anything about it during COVID. So let's just make it up and make it up now by passing the legislation and getting it over and done with. Like, if you've got national infrastructure, electricity, gas networks, road networks, they should be planned centrally. Not, as I said in the article, given the same attention as an attic conversion in a bungalow in North County Dublin.
What's the pushback you get? Is it that they're afraid of cutting across due process?
It's the planning thing. Planning will go backwards. It's not building anything. The runway is built. We already built. We've now got two runways at Dublin Airport, two parallel runways, which, you know, the mathematicians amongst us would say, well, that's got a double capacity, except it's less than where we started from. Like, it's only because they didn't look at this in time. The government are supposed to, you know, serve the people, the infrastructure, business, etc., and say, well, we've got these two runways, we better do something.
But could we not levy the same charge at you? Surely, as a participant who is constrained by their lack of foresight, you could have been roaring about this pre-COVID.
Well, we were the ones that were in this radio studio trying to get everyone back flying. I mean, it was up to the DAA at the time, but let's not go back over that. It was up to them to apply for that to be extended or to be abolished. It is a notional number. It has nothing to do with, do you have the runway capacity? Do you have the buildings? Do you have the road network? It's all there. Someone just forgot to do their job.
Is it something that is common? Is it a challenge that is common across European airports? Do you find yourself constrained through similar bureaucracy in other airports that you operate in?
But you've got generally have an issue of competitiveness across Europe, which the Draghi report has addressed. But you look at last week, whereby the Heidi Alexander, the Minister, the Secretary of State of Transport in the UK, has just made a decision to increase the capacity at Gatwick, to increase the capacity at Luton, to increase the capacity at Stansted, to build a third runway. Now, some of this is just making announcements, but in other words, central government can actually control that without it going to the local sort of planning applications. I mean, we need airports. We're on a peripheral island. We need to get people in and out of this country. We built the runway. All you want to do is use it.
Now, explain the thing that gets raised fairly often in respect to this, which is Ryanair itself did prove for many years that it was possible to use, a la Southwest, secondary airports close to the target destination, as Stansted in the UK being probably, one of your biggest evidences of that. How come the same can't apply in Dublin? If you have an airport that's an hour and a half up the road in the form of Belfast, if you have another one that's 2.5 hours down the road in the form of Shannon, why can't they take the capacity?
They can take the capacity, but they can take it largely for their own hinterlands. You know, like, this thing is demand-driven rather than supply-driven. And what happens is that if a German wants to come to Dublin, not unsurprisingly, they type into the search engine, flights to Dublin. They don't type in flights to Shannon. Shannon has done spectacularly well. We've doubled our passenger numbers in Shannon. We've doubled our passenger numbers in Cork. We've doubled our passenger numbers in Knock pre and post-COVID. So they're doing spectacularly well. I mean, people talk about these things. I mean, like, if Arsenal are playing PSG and all the flights into Paris are full, people will get creative for that weekend to say, well, I can fly to Charleroi or I can fly here, whatever it is, but not on an ongoing basis. Because
really, even though people will happily go to Stansted rather than Heathrow or Gatwick?
Like, Stansted isn't anything. Like, you can get quicker into Stansted than you can from Gatwick in a lot of cases. All the airports compete and they serve the London area. They're all designated as London airports. Shannon isn't designated as a Dublin airport. So you've got Luton, Stansted, Gatwick, London City and Heathrow. They're all London airports and they all have their own unique ways. If you want to go and, if you're doing business in the City of London and you want to pay sky high fares, you can fly into London City and you can be, you know, in Canary Wharf in a couple of minutes. If you want to get into, right into Bishopsgate or whatever it is, Stansted is most convenient rather than Heathrow because you've got to go right across. So, like, there's different ways, but it's demand-driven. It's what people want. I'm sure there are people who start their holiday or their trip in Shannon and then make their way up to Dublin. But, like, this idea that you're going to force people to fly to another airport because you can't get the government to pass the cap. I mean, here's the thing. We have the runways in Dublin. We've got the capacity in Dublin for 60 million. There's an artificial cap of 32 million. The Minister for Transport here just needs to pass the legislation. They have a 20-seat majority. Just get on with it.
If the ultimate passenger capacity is 60 million from the airport, what's Ryanair's projection for its contribution to that? If you didn't have a cap restricting growth in Dublin Airport, what do you think you'd be doing?
We would be happy to continue to grow at Dublin. They have put in a...
do you forecast incentive numbers on that?
No,
do you have...
they put an incentive scheme in there that rewards the most fuel-efficient aircraft, and we responded to that straight away by putting all the new 8,200 aircraft into Dublin because the charges are lower to do that and it's better for the environment because they burn less fuel, they carry more passengers per flight and they make less noise. So that is, and substantially less noise, 50% less noise. So, you know, they're the type of things that you need to do to attract capacity. The only access costs need to go down, and they have temporarily in Dublin, and I hope they continue to do that. You look at places like Cork has done a long-term deal with us, Shannon has done a long-term deal. These are vibrant airport systems competing for capacity because, like, we have to get out of this nationalistic way of looking at it. Like, Cork and Shannon are not competing necessarily with Dublin. They're competing with Turin or Grenoble or Copenhagen because it's the airline decides where to put the capacity into your airport or not. And we will make those decisions on a pan-European basis, where you get this idea, oh, we've got an airport, will somebody come fill it? I mean, like, an airport is an interruption in the fence around an airport. It's the airlines that decide to bring passengers, and they will bring it solely on the basis of access costs. And the airport system here in Ireland, at least, is coming around to that, to saying, look, we need capacity and we need to be competitive. We've got the lowest cost airline in Europe, and we know exactly how they tick, and we will continue to, like, in Ireland.
So
we
does
take
that
this
mean
for
then, when you're looking at the demand in a given area, to some extent, is the manner in which you plan, if you build it, they will come. It's not so much that you look and say there is a huge passenger demand for a route for additional capacity in Dublin. It's if we put a plane there, it'll end up getting filled.
Yeah,
is that it?
That's it. That's it. Like, we do that completely different than any other airline. And then when you're in there and you've got a sustainable low-cost base, you will then look at, can we build frequencies on this route? Because we generally create markets that previously didn't exist. And the only variable cost in our business is airports and taxes. Staff are pretty much the same no matter where you go throughout Europe, because pilots, cabin crew and engineers, international, there's generally an international rate of pay. The price of the aircraft is exactly the same, buy them centrally. Fuel, pretty much the same because we hedge fuel. All those costs within our business are the same. The only difference are taxes and costs at airports. And people have this idea, oh, well, you know, it's only £4 and it's less than the price of a pint and I'd pay it. You wouldn't pay it, right? Because it's not up to you whether, as an individual, whether you're going to pay it. It's the airline will have to absorb that in the 19.99 fare, because we don't get a chance to charge 23.99, because if we could do that, we would have done it.
So okay? It's your contention.
And then what happens is that we decide where the capacity goes based on the lowest cost. So it doesn't. So when you get the Treasury officials in the UK or the Department of Finance here, it's only £3 or £4 or whatever it is. You don't get the chance to pay.
But just so I'm clear, decide. Then. So the end result of that is that when you make the decision, you are not saying we have done market research that causes us to believe that there's a bucket of French people who want to come to Dublin. You're looking at it saying, if we can get that 737 into Dublin at this price, we'll fill it regardless of current demand.
You know, the first thing we look at, what are the costs at the other end? So if the costs at the other end of that route are lower, we're going to fly that first.
Lastly, then, we've heard a lot in US negotiations with the importance of relationships and keeping dialogue open. To any extent, is Ryanair's legacy of being known as being terribly combative with government causing you problems in your capacity to persuade them to do something for you now?
Like, you know, people say this to you all the time. I mean, but it's like, even in places like Spain, whereby we call out the uncompetitive airport charges, and, you know, people will say it's the wrong way about going about it. Look, it has served us well over the last 30 to 40 years. We generally end up getting our way because it's hard to argue against that if you're competitive, you'll be rewarded with additional capacity passengers, which brings extra taxes, extra jobs, extra tourists, extra connectivity that transforms people's lives.
But is there anything in the individual politicians looking at you and saying, when it comes to Ryanair, sup with a long spoon, you don't want to end up being like Mary O'Rourke, you don't want to end up being like Eamon Ryan, keep your distance, let the process work on?
I think it's self-evident, but you say, they're all gone and we're still here.
Eddie, thank you very much. Eddie Wilson, Chief Executive of Ryanair.
Thanks.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.